Okay, good evening and welcome to our live broadcast, November 3rd, 2015. Again, we won't be doing the Dhammapada tonight, so tonight is just a say hello night for now. Yeah, it's nice from my perspective to not
might have a couple of questions though, because from the other
night. That's the thing, is we'll answer questions and say stuff. Well, there might be some things to talk about. There was a problem on the website, on the appointments page, because this whole daylight savings time, that was the culprit. Well, the real culprit is not having a system to deal with daylight savings time changes, because we're dealing with UTC, we're talking in UTC time, so I just hacked it and missed a step, which made, anyway, it's technical, but it's fixed now. Last night I gave a talk to a whole room full of community advisors at McMaster. It's really neat, actually. I wasn't really clear. I hadn't really been paying attention to what the meeting was. I just thought it was some run-of-the-mill conference, but it turns out this was a huge portion of the residents, people who work for the university, to like their second year or upper students, work for the university to make sure that the residence life is runs smooth for people. So taking care of the new students, basically living on their in their residences with them and taking care of any problems they might have, acting as support and so on. So it's really the best group that you could possibly reach with meditation, because these are people who are whose job really is to help others, and who are generally the sort of people who like to help, who like to take care and to do good things. No, they tend to be really, really neat people. So it was a really good group. They were really loud. But I think that's from living on residence, you know, and having to be the sort of the leader on the residence. So I told them a story about 16 years ago. I'm telling a lot of 16-year-old stories because that's when I was in university, before I started practicing meditation. I ended up looking after one of the community advisors one night when he was really drunk, and you know, this girl had broken up with him. And I use it as an example of how the caretakers have to be able to take care of themselves. And it was really, really, really went well, you know. I mean, they really appreciated it, and I was able to explain it properly. And that was only a test run within the university, and there's going to be another bigger version in a week or two weeks, on 11 days, on the 14th. And there's these sort of people are coming from all around either the province or the country. Probably just the province, but I can't remember. And so we will be presenting to them again. There are these two CAs at McMaster organized it. And one of them is a Sri Lankan Buddhist. The other one is Latino. But they're really nice, two really nice people. And yeah, so we're doing it together. So that was nice. I guess if we have questions, let's take questions.
We have some questions. During walking meditation, should the act of turning at the end of the path be divided into lifting, turning, lowering? Thank you, Bhante.
No, it should be turning. I mean, as it's written in the book, no? I mean, I guess the question is whether as you increase the walking step, do you also increase the steps it takes to turn around? And the answer is no, not generally, no. Especially because of how unbalanced that would potentially make you as you turn.
Bhante, should meditators make an effort to suppress their sensual desires to some degree, or is it better for one's practice to simply follow these desires as usual, but try to remain mindful?
Well, the best is not to do either, right? The ideal in everything is not to repress or to follow, but to understand and observe. It actually, technically, it's a kind of suppression, but it's a suppression through wisdom, suppression through insight. So you're suppressing them by seeing the objects clearly as they are. And it's called suppression because it doesn't actually get rid of the problem. The problem can always come back. It's only when you attain Nibbana that the problem is really gone. But it's the idea is creating a new habit. And so it's not a matter of one or the one, another way being one or the other, which way one or the other. Neither one of them are really all that good. So if I were to have to pick, I mean, it's really not fair either, because the way the addiction system works and the way the brain is set up, you can't really oppose your desires for very long. The yes impulse is apparently much, much stronger than the no impulse. So you can only say no for so long. And they've got, I mean, what I'm saying is neuroscientists have observed this fact and can point out, according to the brain chemistry, the brain makeup, why it is. The no part tends to be fairly, or it depends on the person. Some people have a very strong no faculty, I think, or something like that. But in the end, the no faculty it's unsustainable. As soon as you stop saying no, you just start saying yes again. So it's not a sustainable solution. But probably, yes, better to say no than to say yes. I would have to say off the top of my head, I mean, even the Buddha seems to have appreciated that in a pinch, saying no is better than chasing after your desires. It's just, it's not a solution, and in the end it can actually backfire if you rely on it too much.
And that was it. All caught up with questions already.
Oh, I thought some meant lots.
I thought so too. And there were a lot of comments. Maybe time for random announcements. Like, have you ever mentioned on the broadcast about the Saturday Day of Mindfulness for anyone who might be in the Hamilton area?
No, we have. I mean, it's actually just a placeholder right now because we haven't actually done anything with it. This Saturday, I'm going again in the morning. I'm going to London. I think there might be someone trying to come again this Saturday, right?
Yes. Yeah, there was someone signed up and she was going to bring her daughter. London, you don't mean London, England?
No, we have a London in Ontario.
Okay.
It's actually not that far away.
Oh.
Yeah.
But in general, you know, for people that are in the Hamilton area, you're going to designate the Saturdays as...
Try to, yes.
So if you're in the Hamilton area, you can go to the monastery from, 9 to 3?
Right, 9 to 4 maybe.
9 to 3, 9 to 4. Bring your lunch.
Yeah, I mean, the idea was just to designate Saturday as a sort of day that we would encourage people to come out together, so there would be the sense of meditating in a group. If you want to actually meet with me, it doesn't have to be on Saturday, and It might not always be possible on Saturday, but I'll be back in the afternoon on Saturday. And then on the 14th, which is a Saturday as well, is it? Right, so this Saturday, yes. And then next Saturday as well. Next Saturday, I've been invited to Toronto, and then I'm back here for the CA conference in the afternoon. So that next Saturday is right out.
So there's a couple of Saturdays booked up. But eventually, once Bhante gets rid of all the other Saturday obligations, there'll be a nice day of mindfulness every Saturday. Mm-hmm. That is nice. Have you thought about having any sort of a children's meditation on those days? Like where people would bring their children to learn meditation?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have that much of a community yet.
No, but for anyone who's in the area, there's a meetup group, a website meetup. So if you just Google meetup Hamilton, what's it called? Hamilton Meditation Group or something?
Sure. I mean, if people want to, I'm not really keen on adding more events. We're trying that with the McMaster Buddhism Association. And if you set up an event, it's a bit of mental work to get it set up, and then no one shows up. So I think for the time being, I'm just going to be a little bit more organic about it. And when people show up, we can work things out. Because I'm doing quite a bit of scheduled stuff anyway.
Definitely. This is just it's a good format just to let people in the Hamilton area know that there is a monastery there now. And then the other thing is the website sirimangalo.org has a nice new layout on it if anybody hasn't looked at it for a while. We're trying to get that a little more organized to have some updated information.
I thought we changed the website a while ago, and then when you mentioned it, I looked and, oh, it's still got the old layout.
Yeah.
Quite sure I'd changed the layout quite some time ago. But
no, I've never seen it look anything different than, but I think it looks nice now, a lot of fresher of a look.
Yeah, well, it's the Nirvana theme. Did you notice?
I didn't, no.
That's what it's
That's
called.
That's cool. Perfect.
We're also using it for the McMaster Buddhism Association.
And I think Anthony had posted something in Slack, the British Columbia Buddhist Vihara is using the same theme, so everybody likes the Nirvana theme. Understandable. If there's anything the website is missing, if anyone wants to post a comment, I'm doing some minor editing and would be happy to add anything in if we're missing something blatant.
Okay, well then, that's all for tonight. Thank you all for tuning in. The appointment schedule is working now, so if anyone wants to fill up the last three slots, should probably just drop out of university and add more slots to this, no? More value.
There you go.
I don't know. There's something about getting my degree that still seems a little bit... doesn't really, like I would have never thought before. I heard about other monks getting a degree and I thought, well, what's that for? But everyone said, you know, being in the West, there's something about having a degree.
So you still think it's a good thing to have?
No, I don't know. I mean, I don't really care. I'm not going to feel pleased or something when I get a degree. I know my father probably will. That was one of the reasons. Because I did make a promise, an agreement with him many years ago that I never kept.
Oh, that was where he was going to stop hunting and you were going to get a degree?
Yeah. I don't know. I have to think about it. Anyway, next semester I might be able to take evening courses. I might just do some evening courses, like a course in Buddhism or something. That was the sort of the idea, that I'd be able to study Buddhism. It's always nice to have some formal system. Today I had an interesting conversation with my philosophy TA. He's doing his thesis on pragmatism, color in pragmatism, which, you know, probably doesn't mean much unless you're a philosopher. Didn't to me. But he explained pragmatism, and it's very close to Buddhism. In fact, it's probably heavily influenced by Buddhism. And he was talking about, like, this guy William James, who fairly famous guy, and he was influenced by Buddhism, and we were talking about sort of the readings that we've been doing in our philosophy class and how they relate or how they differ from pragmatism. So apparently John Locke, is he a pragmatist? I think in some ways he was a pragmatist. But pragmatism is just empirical. John Locke was an empiricist, so he only looked at what you experience, what is readily apparent. So there was no sense of substance, things that actually exist. This is what I'm studying in philosophy, which is quite interesting from a Buddhist perspective. The idea of whether entities exist, right? So Descartes and Spinoza, or the other two philosophers we're looking at, they talk about substance. And then Spinoza goes a step further and talks about something called modes and attributes. And it's all very weird. But then Locke comes along and says, what meaning is there in substance? Which is, it's a fairly Buddhist thing to say, to stop thinking of things as entities and more in terms of events. Anyway, it's interesting stuff.
Did he have any knowledge of Buddhism, to your knowledge, or
John
did he
Locke,
come to?
I think he was a student of Hobbes, who was a materialist. So, and there was sort of a tendency, they were moving towards materialism, and they were very interested in the material world in ways that they hadn't been. Like, they were trying to figure it out. They started realizing, hey, we can figure this out. We can actually come to understand the natural world. Whereas before it was just like, well, it must be an act of God. God is running things. And then they said, no, well, actually it's not. It's actually running fairly mechanistic. And then it led to Newton and this whole idea of mechanistic physics, which is now has been basically thrown out to some extent by quantum physics, which is non-mechanistic, I think. Anyway, the big problem is it's a lot of thinking, and they seem to be doing a lot of thinking. I think my brain stopped working in that way many years ago. I don't think so much anymore.
Lots of thinking in philosophy.
I'm learning Latin, which I'll probably never use.
Are you able to keep straight the Latin and the Pali?
Yeah. I'm not learning Pali. That'd be something if I could take a Pali course. But it would probably be... that's the thing. If I do religious studies, so I'll probably be able to use Pali in the later courses. I was just kind of this year was trying to do some easier courses, maybe next semester. I can take an upper year Buddhism course. But, I've done a couple of short papers this semester, and that's kind of been good to get back into trying to write a formal paper. just been kind of easy. So I haven't felt like it's been problematic. It's just kind of, well, there are other things I could be doing, I suppose.
Do you have to take phys ed?
No. Why? Why would I have to take
phys ed? I did in college. They actually required us to have a couple of units of, like, a gym class. I remember took skiing and volleyball and swimming.
I don't have such classes in university here, I don't think. Maybe in kinesiology, I don't know. No, I don't think so.
Extracurricular,
intramural, whatever you call it. Yeah, you can do it all. I mean.
Yeah, no, these were something that was required just for all degrees. It's kind of strange, but not a bad thing. They were enjoyable.
Anyway.
There is.
Another question?
There's a question. I'm not sure if it's a hypothetical question. Bhante, will we ever know the answer to what is 1, 2, 3 from the Dhammapada?
It's funny, I didn't even give you an answer, did I? Shoot, and I meant to as well. I just must have gotten caught up in something else. And it's good. It's good to leave you wondering what is one. I wonder if there's a translation of it on the internet. There must be somewhere, no? Maybe someone can provide the translation of the Kumarapanha. So let's see if I can. I can't remember them all because we don't really use them. I know the first one, Ekanamaking Sabbe Satta Ahare Titika. All beings subsist on food. It's one. One is food. And interesting, relating back to this idea of food. Food being somehow important and somehow central. But by ahara is meant different kinds of food. So there's the physical food and then there's mental food, basically. You know, four kinds in total. Two is, I think, namancha rupancha, nama rupa. Yep, namancha rupancha, dini namaking, tiso vedana, the three vedana are number three. Chattari namaking, the four arya, what is four? The four arya satcha. Pancha namaking, panchupadana kanda, the five aggregates of clinging. Chat namaking, what is six? Chat ajatikani ayatanani. The six internal sense bases. So seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking. Satta namaking, the seven bojanga, the seven factors of enlightenment. Artha namaking, ariyo arthangiko mago, the Eightfold Noble Path is eight. Nava namaking, nava sattavasa. What is nine? The nine abodes of beings, and I can't remember what those all are, but it's basically human and so on, angel and Brahma. I can't remember. It's a sort of a weird enumeration, but there are nine. Sattavasa. Dasa namaking, what is ten? Dasa hangehi samanagato arahati vachati. The ten factors accomplished with or associated with, if one goes by, or when one has 10 factors, one is an araha. So in here we have in the commentary, let's go through and see. Dasasu bhikkhaveda mesu sammah. think it's the ten, the Eightfold Noble Path plus Samanyana and Samavimukti. So right knowledge and right deliverance. Sattavasa. Yeah, the nine sattavas are a bit strange, actually. Yeah, it's the 10 basic aspects of Buddhism, fairly core things that the Buddha apparently is supposed to have taught to Rahula. These were for Rahula. Funny, I don't hear about them so often. Huh?
Bhante, the other night I was mentioning the seven Bojangas. I was claiming I had read a version where investigation was the first one, and I was completely wrong. It was Sati, as you said, of course. And once I looked it up, I was just remembering it completely wrong. So thank you for reminding me about that.
Okay, enough. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you, Bhante.
Thanks, Robin.
Good night.